Part 3. The Need for Unity. Although Einstein's theories and quantum theory are incredibly powerful, they have their kryptonite. They can predict the behavior of atoms and planets with exquisite precision, but crumple into a writhing heap when confronted with questions a five-year-old might ask. What's interesting is that where one theory does poorly, the other tends to do well, suggesting that unifying them would solve their problems. Unification becomes absolutely essential in extreme settings, such as black holes and the Big Bang, which neither theory can handle on its own. Chapter 7. Why Unify? In this chapter, reasons to unify the theories, the problem of frozen time, where the standard model fails, the bane of the cosmological constant. Why haven't past efforts to unify worked? On a purely practical level, there's no real need to unify the general theory of relativity and quantum theory. They're both incredibly successful, experimentally and conceptually, but on an intellectual level, each is missing something. In a case of yin and yang, quantum theory may fill the holes in relativity, and relativity may plug quantum theory's gaps. Theories of the world unite. The general theory of relativity was not even a year old, and quantum theory was still in its birth throes when Albert Einstein recognized that the two theories would have to be reconciled. Their worldviews are compelling, yet incompatible, and the clash comes out in three ways. Extreme situations. Ordinarily, when gravity is strong, quantum effects are weak, and when quantum effects are strong, gravity isn't. But when both are in full force, they feed off each other, and only a unified theory can tell what will happen. Situations where this happens include black holes, the Big Bang, and would-be time machines. Conceptual footings. Nature fits together seamlessly, yet the two theories don't. Quantum theory treats space and time as fixed and absolute, which general relativity denies. General relativity treats objects as having definite properties such as position and velocity, which quantum theory denies. The depth of their incompatibility becomes evident when physicists try to describe gravity in quantum terms. Loose ends. Each theory has shortcomings that require some deeper theory to fix. Relativity is riddled with holes. Quantum theory is a hall of mirrors, and the standard model of particles passes the buck on crucial questions. These issues are the subject of this chapter. General relativity versus quantum theory. Aspect: basic idea. Relativity: space and time are unified and behave like a big sheet of rubber. Quantum: matter and energy are divided into chunks. Aspect: what it explains. Relativity: gravity. Quantum: electricity, magnetism, nuclear forces. Aspect: how it explains them. Relativity: matter distorts space-time, and space-time guides matter. Quantum: particles interact. Aspect: poster child. Relativity: black hole. Quantum: mighty atom. Aspect: sample use. Relativity: orbits of celestial bodies. Quantum: chemical reactions. Aspect: view of space-time. Relativity: dynamic. Quantum: static. Aspect: properties of matter. Relativity: definite. Quantum: probabilistic. Aspect: toy that represents it. Relativity: silly putty. Quantum: Legos. Aspect: worst failing. Relativity: predicts that matter reaches infinite density in black holes. Quantum: nobody knows what the theory really means. Woe with Einstein. The next time you're running late for an appointment, use this perfect excuse. Physicists think there may be no such thing as time, in which case there's no such thing as lateness either. The future does not come to pass. It already exists, so you are on time no matter what you do. Try it. I'm sure it'll work. Considering how obsessed most people are about time, even those who profess to be laid back get upset when it's their time that's being wasted. You'd at least hope that physicists and philosophers of physics could figure out what time is. Sorry. Einstein's theories describe what space and time do, but not what they are. Are they things in and of themselves, with a reality independent of stars, galaxies, and their other contents? Or are they merely artificial devices to describe how objects are related to one another? The experts argue back and forth and have invented these scenarios to help probe the issue. In the loop, are they, space and time, like a canvas onto which an artist paints? They exist whether or not the artist paints on them? Or are they akin to parenthood? There is no parenthood until there are parents and children. John Norton, University of Pittsburgh. That empty feeling. Imagine a patch of space-time that's totally empty. No stars, no galaxies, just void. Outside this patch, the equations of relativity say what the shape of space-time is. The distribution of matter determines it. Inside, however, relativity is ambiguous. There, space-time can bend itself into any number of shapes as long as it dovetails with space-time outside the patch. So space-time behaves like a big tent. The tent poles, which represent matter, force the fabric to assume a certain shape. But if we leave out a pole, creating the equivalent of an empty patch, part of the tent can sag or bow out or ripple unpredictably in the wind. What happens in the empty patch is random. We don't need to concoct empty patches to encounter the predicament. Everywhere we go, relativity is unable to choose among multiple possible shapes of space-time. This predicament, known as the hole argument, greatly puzzled Einstein. At first glance, this randomness violates the concept of determinism, whereby everything that happens happens for a reason. For determinism to hold, those shapes must be mathematical artifacts, equivalent ways of describing the same set of relationships among objects. Space-time might still have an existence independent of its contents, but it can't be as simple as a blank canvas that a painter fills. Trying to find the time. A related conundrum arises when we break space-time into space and time to study how space morphs over time. As matter jostles around, its gravity changes, so space should take on a new shape. But the equations indicate that its shape does not, in fact, change. The world, according to relativity, is locked in place like a children's game when someone shouts, "Freeze!" All measurable quantities remain constant. Physicists call this the problem of frozen time. Mathematically, the little t denoting time drops out of the equations, and the theory struggles to explain why the world around us is dynamic and ever-changing. Definition: the problem of frozen time, also known simply as the problem of time, is the conundrum that, according to the general theory of relativity, the world should be static and unchanging. At the least, it suggests that mathematical time is not the same as clock time. Some scientists go to extremes and say there is no such thing as time, period. Maybe time is like money, having no meaning on its own, but acting as a convenient means of exchange. When we buy a loaf of bread, we're really bartering our labor for it. In principle, we could do away with money and undertake an intricate set of barter exchanges. Similarly, when we say that a heart beats once a second, we're really saying that it beats once per tick of a clock. In principle, we could relate heartbeats directly to the oscillations inside a clock and to all the other processes in the universe without ever mentioning the word time. The world may be frozen in place, but the cat's cradle of interrelationships produce the illusion of change. In the loop. Time is an effect of our ignorance of the details of the world. If we had complete knowledge of all the details of the world, we would not have the sensation of the flow of time. Carlo Rovelli, University of the Mediterranean. For most researchers, getting rid of time flies in the face of common sense. So if you ever try out your excuse that time and punctuality are illusions, be prepared for the response, "Prove it." Relativity can't offer any such proof. The philosophical dilemma has no impact on its quantitative predictions. Only by uniting it with quantum theory might physicists find a way to unravel what time really is. And if you can come up with a unified theory, I think the person you're meeting will forgive your lateness. The standard model gets ratty. So are you asking yourself what the heck quantum theory means? That question has troubled physicists ever since there was such a thing as quantum theory. Unlike relativity, quantum theory evolved mostly through ad hoc steps rather than a grand vision. The world described by the theory is wonderfully rich, but also inscrutable. It limits what we can learn about it. Physicists are especially perplexed by what happens during a measurement when an element of randomness enters into the theory's predictions. Unification with general relativity may not magically clear away the haze, but by pushing quantum theory into new realms, it should at least inspire some new thinking. Quantum leap. Interestingly, quantum theory's problem with explaining the results of measurements is exactly the opposite of general relativity's. In relativity, it's hard to figure out what to measure. Space and time are so malleable that you can't pinpoint where and when the measurement occurs. But it's easy to explain the value you get, since the theory makes definite predictions. In quantum theory, it's easy to figure out what to measure, but hard to explain the value you get, since the theory makes only probabilistic predictions. It's an example of how the two theories have complementary strengths and weaknesses. The pinnacle of quantum theory, the standard model of particles, makes such accurate predictions that it can't be wrong per se. But it can't be the final word either. Too many questions remain unanswered, such as, why are there three quantum forces, electromagnetism and the weak and strong nuclear forces, and why are they progressively more elaborate? What happens to electromagnetism on very fine scales? The nuclear forces weaken, yet electromagnetism strengthens without limit. Some new effects must intervene to tame it. Why is the weak nuclear force lopsided, treating seemingly equivalent particles differently? Why does matter exist to begin with? The particles of force emerge organically from the principles underlying the model, but the particles of matter have to be put in manually. Why do particles of matter come in two categories, quarks, the nuclear particles, and leptons, such as electrons and neutrinos, and in three progressively heavier families? How do particles in different categories have such closely related properties, such as a common unit of electric charge? For answers, physicists look to unification. So, let's take a closer look at a couple of especially vexing types of problems. Hierarchy problems. A hierarchy problem sounds like something Dilbert would whine about. The hierarchical modern corporation is truly a marvel of organizational prowess, the marvel being that a company manages to get anything done at all. The standard model, too, is hierarchical, and physicists sometimes marvel that it works as well as it does. Here are three of its hierarchies and the problems they create. The range of elementary particle masses. The top dog is the top quark, which weighs much more, a million times, than the humble electron, let alone lowly neutrinos, 10 trillion times more. These values are about as sensible as a typical corporate pay scale. The model accepts them as a fact of life, without explanation. The range in the behavior of forces. At a high enough energy, the forces of nature begin to unite. Electromagnetism and the weak nuclear force merge together at an energy roughly equivalent to the mass of one top quark. But to meld the combined electroweak forces with the strong nuclear force is projected to take 10 trillion times as much energy. Why do forces have this huge difference? Definition: a hierarchy problem arises when processes occur on widely varying scales. An example is the Higgs hierarchy problem, in which the energy of the Higgs particle is much less than that of the processes that determine it. The full range of energy scales in nature. The highest we can go is the Planck scale, and the lowest is empty space. Empty really means as empty as possible. Even the best possible vacuum is still threaded by electromagnetic and other fields. Being quantum, these fields can't be zeroed out. Their irreducible energy is the same everywhere in space and in time, so physicists call it the cosmological constant. Definition: the cosmological constant is the energy present in empty space. Observations suggest it's equivalent to a handful of particles per cubic meter. The standard model can't begin to explain such a low value. Quantum theory has so little to say about these hierarchies because it has a socialist streak. It acts to break down hierarchies and make everything equal. The most natural value for quantities such as mass is either zero or extremely high, such as the Grand Unification Scale or the Planck Scale. If a value lies somewhere in the middle, we have to jump through theoretical hoops to justify it. In the case of the particle masses, their most natural value is zero. To explain their actual values, physicists had to build a special process into standard model. The process involving the so-called Higgs particle is widely considered ad hoc. No disrespect to Dr. Higgs, but if physicists were voting for their least favorite particle, the Higgs would probably win. One of the model's own fathers called it the toilet of the standard model. In the case of the force strengths, the Higgs is again the troublemaker. Its problem, as with certain people, is excessive self-love. The Higgs interacts with all particles, including itself. This self-interaction generates extra energy that acts as extra mass. Most other particles with a narcissistic tendency have counterbalancing traits that put a cap on the extra energy, but not the Higgs. Its mass should get pumped all the way up to the Grand Unification Scale, carrying the merger of electromagnetism and the weak nuclear force with it. The standard model maintains the hierarchy by fiat, by endowing the Higgs particle with static properties that cancel its hierarchy-busting tendencies. The cancellation has to be good to 14 decimal places. That strikes physicists as ad hoc. They have a hunch that some hidden dynamic process limits the Higgs mass. In the case of the cosmological constant, the most natural value is again the Grand Unification Scale. Adding up all the field fluctuations implies an energy equivalent to more than a Google, 10 to the 100th power top quarks per cubic meter. In other words, empty space should be chock full of energy. Adding anything to it should be like spitting in the sea. For most situations, this energy stored in the vacuum is unimportant. It's paper money, like the value of your house. Whether it's $50,000 or $1 million, the money locked up in your home doesn't help you pay for groceries. Similarly, for the three forces of the standard model, the huge vacuum energy is immaterial because it's constant everywhere, and these forces respond to energy differences. For gravity, though, the vacuum energy does matter. The strength of gravity depends on the total absolute amount of energy, counting both empty space and the particles within it. The standard model postulates some static energy, a fixed amount woven into the fabric of space, to counterbalance the field fluctuations. As with the Higgs, the cancellation of static and dynamic energy has to be improbably exact. Physicists call this oddity the cosmological constant problem. It makes Dilbert's company look like a paragon of rationality. Definition: the cosmological constant problem is the mystery that the cosmological constant should be huge, but isn't. A matter of antimatter. Don't take this personally, but you shouldn't exist. You're made of matter, quarks and leptons, as is the bulk of the visible material in the universe. The cosmos contains only a smattering of antimatter, consisting of anti-quarks and anti-leptons, which is good news. Whenever matter and antimatter touch, they annihilate in a blaze of energy. So if the cosmos contained equal amounts of matter and antimatter, it would soon have none of either. All that would remain is an inferno of energy, a universe full of light, and nothing to illuminate. Clearly, matter and antimatter must have gotten out of balance at some point. An excess of one part in a billion would have been enough. That is, for every 1 billion one quarks, there used to be 1 billion antiquarks. After they paired off and blew up, only a single particle remained. Repeated over the cosmos, this process would leave enough matter to make up all the observed galaxies. But how did even that modest excess arise? In the Standard Model, matter and antimatter behave almost identically. Although they do differ slightly, physicists don't know how this slight difference could have generated an excess of matter. Particle reactions are two-way streets. If they can create an excess of matter, they can just as easily erase it. For the reactions to go one way and not the other, conditions must be sufficiently out of kilter. And according to the Standard Model, they never were. The answer to the puzzle of your existence must come from beyond the Standard Model. A punch in the gut. Although the Standard Model brings together the three known quantum forces under one roof, it really unites only two of them, electromagnetism and the weak nuclear force. The strong nuclear force remains distinct. Many of the problems with the Standard Model stem from this incomplete unification. To get all three forces to tie the knot, physicists since the early 1970s have sought to develop a so-called grand unified theory, GUT. Grand unification is not a full unification. It still leaves gravity out in the cold, but it does fuse all the known quantum forces and particles. Definition: a grand unified theory, GUT, is a theory that describes electromagnetism, the weak nuclear force, and the strong nuclear force as aspects of a single, undifferentiated force. Physicists have proposed many such theories, but none yet works. The electroweak lies down with the strong, the quark with the lepton, electric charge with quark color. A GUT would explain why diverse aspects of nature have so much in common. Among the many arguments for a GUT, notice that two of the hierarchies mentioned in the previous section involve the number 10 trillion. The electroweak and strong nuclear forces become equal in strength at an energy equivalent to the mass of 10 trillion top quarks. Top quarks are 10 trillion times as massive as neutrinos. That's an intriguing coincidence. It suggests that a GUT may explain the anomalously low mass of neutrinos, which makes no sense in the Standard Model anyway. There are different ways to formulate a GUT. All introduce a new type of particle, dubbed the X particle, which carries a new type of force that converts a quark to a lepton or vice versa. This particle is a mixed blessing. It might have helped rig the universe in favor of matter, but it would also destabilize protons, the bedrock of atomic nuclei. If the quarks inside protons could transform into leptons, they eventually would, and the proton would fall apart. It's a rare process, but it should be observable, and physicists have yet to see it happen. That null result rules out the first round of proposed GUTs. What's tantalizing is that these GUTs almost work. They're so close. It's as though they're missing just one more concept to round them out. For that concept, physicists need to look to a more ambitious unification, one that also connects to the behavior of gravity and space-time. It's another example of how general relativity and quantum theory may be the answer to each other's needs. The least you need to know. Relativity theory has a number of loose ends, not least the question of what time really is. Quantum theory begs for a firm conceptual grounding. The Standard Model of Particles explains particles, but nothing explains the model. A partial unification called grand unification doesn't work, and no one knows why. The answers may lie in the full unification of quantum theory with relativity.